Finding a Path with a Heart, Carlos Castaneda. Anything is one of a million paths. Therefore, you must always keep in mind that a path is only a path. And if you feel you should not follow it, you must not stay with it under any conditions. To have such clarity, you must lead a disciplined life. Only then will you know that any path is only a path, and there's no affront to oneself or to others in dropping it, if that's what your heart tells you to do. But your decision to keep on a path or to leave it must be free of fear or ambition. I warn you, look at every path closely and deliberately. Try it as many times as you think necessary, and then ask yourself and yourself alone one question. The question is one that only a very wise old man asks. My benefactor told me about it once when I was young, but my blood was too vigorous for me to understand it. Now I do understand it, and I'll tell you what it is. Does this path have a heart? You see, all paths are the same. They go nowhere. They're paths going through the bush or into the bush. In my own life, I could say I've traversed long, long paths, but I'm not anywhere. So my benefactor's question has meaning now. Does this path have a heart? If it does, the path is good. If it does not, it is of no use. Both paths lead nowhere. But one has a heart, the other does not. One makes for a joyful journey. As long as you follow it, you are one with it. The other will make you curse your life. One makes you strong, the other weakens you. The trouble is nobody asks the question, and when a man finally realizes that he or she has taken a path without a heart, the path is ready to kill them. At that point, very few people can stop to deliberate and leave the path. A path without a heart is never enjoyable. You have to work hard even to take it. On the other hand, a path with a heart is easy. It does not make you work at liking it. So when asking the question about love, if the love is painful, if the path is painful, it's not enjoyable. It doesn't have a heart. You see, for me, there is only the traveling on paths that have a heart, or on any path that may have a heart. There I travel, and the only worthwhile challenge is to traverse its full length. And there I travel, looking breathlessly. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. My co-host in the studio with me today, my cousin and dear friend, Julian Joyeau. Today we want to talk to you about courage, courage in love. Courage, as our grandmother used to say, courage. And they would say that every now and then, whenever there was a stress that somebody had to go through, they would kind of just hold your hands up and they'd say to you, you know, courage, meaning you've got to go through it. We heard recently Dr. Fred Cheftel talk about getting off medications because a lot of times the medications cause further problems. And he said what it takes is you've got to go 6 days or 7 days without any medication. And he said it takes courage. Of course, Fred Cheftel was not Italian. Courage. Where does courage come in when it comes to relationships? Where does courage come in general? What is that thing? I was with a man recently who was talking about Medal of Honor winners. We're talking about actually Audie Murphy. And he said, he's having been a soldier and having been in the military on the front lines, he said, you know, the thing about Medal of Honor winners is, he said, they all go crazy. Now, he said, what happens at that moment is it isn't just a matter of courage. It's a matter of they lose their minds. They're in a situation and they don't care about whether they're going to get killed or not. And they charge ahead because they leave their bodies. The ones who charge ahead and succeed are given a medal. The ones who charge ahead and fail may be given a medal posthumously. He said, but it's usually courage. Very often is a moment of insanity. Well, let's take a look at this. I remember once being in West Hampton, smack dab in the middle of this incredible fire. Fire surrounded by hundreds of firefighters. It was very exciting. Everybody was pumped up, pumping out the fire. Nobody was in danger, but the fire was there, and the trees were in danger, and the animals were in danger. During one of the big moments, Thursday night, when the wind suddenly turned and a fire reignited and was headed back to our faces, I saw this incredible joining together of physical forces, mostly men. Some women, but mostly men. And within less than a minute, the blaze was fought back by men and equipment. It was like Nintendo on the biggest level. And there was a chance to relax, and I heard a guy say, my wife and I were going to have our in-laws over for the weekend. I guess they can't come out now, and he laughed. And some of his friends laughed, and I saw it. This is an all-volunteer fire department. You mean you have the courage to come out here and stand in the path of a ravenous monster of a fire, and you're willing to face a 20-foot wall of flames aiming right in your direction, but you don't have the courage to tell your wife that you do not enjoy inviting the in-laws over for the weekend? Well, there's a dichotomy if I ever heard one. But then I thought about it. It's not so strange. There are two kinds of courage. Physical courage and emotional courage. And they're very different.
In physical courage, you have to face the outside opponent for a short time. Remember, they call it an act of courage. It's an act, not the whole play. But in emotional courage, you have to face yourself. And it's not an act of courage. It requires commitment.
This is Armand DeMille with Julian Joiello, with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about courage today, and I'll tell you where I'm going. I think that loving, at its best, takes an enormous amount of courage. And I think, I say this without judgment, most people love wimpily. Most people have cowardly love, not brave love.
Well, what is cowardly love? It's the kind of love where you are not yourself. It's a love filled with hidden thoughts and quiet resentments. It's average love. It's the way we were taught to love. It's what we saw. You know what I'm talking about.
What are three things that you would say about how you feel to your best friend, but you would never say to your love partner? Think about that. Are there three things you would say about what you feel that you would say to your best friend, but not to your partner?
Would you tell your love partner if you were attracted to someone else, or would you be afraid of the consequences?
What if you're like so many people I know and you don't have a best friend because your relationship excludes all other close relationships, Julian? You ever see that kind of person? A person says, oh, you spend so much time with your friends and they just kind of try to separate you from your friends.
Right.
You've been in those kind of relationships, huh?
If you don't have a best friend, here's another way to look at it. What are the three things about yourself that you would tell your therapist but never tell your mate?
That's an interesting thought, Julian. Three things that I would tell my therapist but never tell my mate. Well, certainly there are things, you know, most people would not want to share if they're attracted to somebody else. Most people wouldn't. I guess it would be the things that would get a reaction of anger from your mate.
Right. It's like the things you're afraid of showing them because you think they're going to judge you for it.
Can fear be such an important part of relationships? Being so present? Gee, that's not my idea. Well, maybe it doesn't have to be that way in intimate relationships. What are the three things you would tell a cab driver about yourself or the way you feel towards your husband, wife, lover, or partner that you would never say to them directly? Like, my husband's getting fat. Like, what are the three things that you would say? And why? What happens? Don't we all have the same idea?
Didn't we all wish for an honest, open, loving, best friend relationship? Wasn't the idea to love, honor, trust, share?
How do we go from that loving self to this other self that so many people call love.
Do you suspect we were meant to sabotage our trust all along?
What an interesting question. How many of you notice that whatever your love is like now, whatever your unhappiness now, it's happened before? That this has happened before to you? Do you see patterns in your love? Have you been in this kind of relationship before? Have you felt this way before? Well, that brings us back to our subject, courage in loving relationships.
Think about this. Other than leaving the relationship, think of something you would do in your current relationship that would take a bit of courage on your part.
You would think of something you would do in your current relationship that would take a bit of courage on your part. Wow. Okay, let's sit with that one for a minute. Think of something you would do in your current relationship that would take a bit of courage on your part and not separate from the person. You see, it's leaving is what most people do because they don't think they could deal with it. You see, leaving a relationship doesn't take much courage. But confronting an issue and sticking with it to face the music, that takes courage. Think about it. In past or current relationships, is there something that you would say or you wish you had said that would take courage on your part, that if you had confronted it and said it, perhaps you could have worked it out with the other person? This is Armand DeMille with Julian Joiello. We're talking about courage in relationships, and we're talking about taking risks.
And sometimes it seems so hard because you're sitting there and you're right next to them and it's on the tip of your tongue, but you can't do it.
What stops us? Well, it's something that stops us with risk. Talking about courage in relationships, what we go through nowadays is very different and nowhere near by comparison to what happened in Europe during the 30s and 40s, during the Nazi regime. I dug up an archive of Bertolt Brecht's play, which is with Maggie Smith reading a monologue, a fantastic, incredible piece, but I guarantee you it could rip at your heart. So if you listen and you don't feel like feeling anything intense, turn the radio off. Come on back in 15 minutes. This is beautiful.
Things out of this play about a Jewish woman in Berlin in the year of 36 or 37.
Oh, this is Judith Keith speaking. Is that you, doctor? Ah, good evening. Well, I just wanted to call up and say I think you better look around for a new bridge partner because I'm going away. No, I don't think that it will be for very long, doctor, but it won't be less than a couple of weeks. I would like to go to Amsterdam. Yes, spring is lovely there. Well, I have friends there. No, doctor, friends. In the plural, unbelievable as it sounds. How can you go on playing bridge without me? But we haven't played for the last 2 weeks, doctor. Oh, yes, of course. Well, Fritz has had a cold, too, and when he gets this cold, one just cannot go on playing bridge anymore. I've said so, too. Why should I? Well, no, Tekla had her mother for a visit, no? So why would I believe that, doctor? Well, come as suddenly as all that, it's just that I have kept putting it off, but I really have to go now. Yes, we have to call off our movie day too. Would you say hello to Tekla for me? Yes, I will, and you will call him then on Sunday, doctor? Fine. Yes, of course. Goodbye. Oh, well, this is Judith Keith speaking. I would like to speak to Frau Scheck. Thank you. Oh, Lotte, this is Judith speaking. Well, I'm just calling to say a quick goodbye because I'm going away for a little while. No, I'm quite well. I just wanted to see a couple of new faces. So what I'm really calling about is this Fritz is bringing the professor home for dinner on Tuesday, and I was wondering if you could come too, as I already did say I'm leaving tonight. No, I'm just... Yes, that's right, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just telling you that I am leaving tonight. It's got nothing to do with it. I would love for you to come anyway. Well, let's say although I'm not here, Oh, yes, of course, I know you will not like that, but these are troubled times and we all have to be careful, so will you come then? If it's all right for Max to come along too. Why, certainly, after all, the professor will be here. Would you please call him and tell him that? Fine. Well, I have to hang up now. Yes. Goodbye. Gertrude, this is Judith speaking. Well, I'm so sorry to disturb you. Thank you. I just wanted to ask you if you could come and look after Fritz because I'm going away for a couple of months. No, I just thought that you was his sister. Why don't you want to? Well, it won't look like that, Gertrude. Certainly not in Fritz's case. Oh, yes, of course. He knows that you and I didn't get along with each other too well. I see. You would like him to call you. Fine. Well, I will tell him that, Goethe. Well, it is a big apartment, Goethe, but I think that you will find it in order. What should be done about his study? Well, Ida knows. Why don't you leave it to her? No, I find her quite intelligent, and he is used to her. And one more thing, Gertrude, and please, I hope you don't misunderstand me. But he doesn't like when you talk before dinner. Could you remember that? See, I have always respected it. Well, I would rather not discuss that now. My train is leaving soon, and I haven't finished packing, you see. Well, you should... You should look after his suits, and you should see that he goes to the tailor, because he's ordered a new coat, and you should see that his bedroom is well heated. Yeah, he always sleeps with an open window, and I think it's too cold now. No, I don't think that he should become inured to it, but I have to hang up now. Goodbye, and thank you very much, and we will write to each other, won't we, Gertrude? Anishan, it's Judith speaking. Listen, I'm leaving right away. No, it has to be. It's getting too difficult. Well, it's just too difficult. Yes, no, he doesn't want it. He knows nothing. I just simply packed. Oh, I don't think so. I don't think he'll say very much. It's too difficult for him, you know, too many technicalities. No, he hasn't changed. On the contrary. Look, darling, I would like you to be nice to him. Could you please? Just a little in the beginning. And yes, especially on Sundays. And could you please see that he moves? Because this apartment, it's really too big for him. Well, I would like to say goodbye to you, but you know the janitor. It may be too risky for you. So I'll say goodbye now. No. I don't want you to come to the station. No, please. I don't want you to. No, I'll write to you. Yes, of course. Goodbye. So, now what do I tell you, Fritz? I'm going now. Fritz, maybe I have stayed too long already. You have to forgive me for that, but... No, you shouldn't keep me any longer, Fritz. It's so obvious that I will be your undoing. I know you're not cowardly. I know you're not afraid of the police, but there are things that are So much worse than the police. They won't take you to a concentration camp tomorrow or the next day. They won't let you into the clinic. I know you won't say anything then, but you will be sick, and I won't have you sitting over there turning pages of magazines. So you see, Fritz, I'm really going out of pure egoism. Don't say anything. Don't say that you have not changed, because you have changed. Last week, for instance, you said, quite objectively, that the percentage of Jewish scientists, it was, after all, not so great. Yes. It always starts with objectivity. And why do you keep telling me that I become such a Jewish nationalist? Naturally, I have, Fritz. It is so catching, Fritz. What has happened to us? I haven't told you that I haven't told you that I wanted to go. And that I've been wanting to go for a long time, because I cannot talk when I look at you. To talk, it just seems so futile. Well, they have already settled everything. What's got into them, Fritz? What do they actually want? And what do I do to them? I never meddle in politics. I'm a bourgeois housewife. I keep servants and so forth. And now, there are only blondes that are allowed to do that. I very often thought of what you said to me many years ago. There are valuable people and less valuable people, you said. The valuable people, they get insulin when they have sugar in their blood, and the less valuable people, they shouldn't have any. I used to agree with you, fool that I was, and now, Fritz, they have made new categories of this sort. And I belong to the less valuable ones. Yes. And it serves me right. That's right. I am packing, Fritz. Oh, you must not act as if you had not noticed it during these last few days, because you have noticed it. Everything is tolerable, Fritz, except for one thing, and that is that you and I cannot look each other in the eyes during this last hour that remains to us. They're not going to get away with that. The liars set everyone lying. You see, 10 years ago, when someone said that they didn't think that I looked Jewish, you would very quickly say, yes, she does. I like that, Fritz. So why? Why should I evade the issue now? I am going, Fritz, because otherwise they're going to take away your position as a chief surgeon at the clinic. Yes! They already cut you there to your face. And because you can't sleep nights. I don't want you to tell me not to go. I am in a hurry, Fritz, because I don't want you to tell me go. It is a question of time. Yes, character is a question of time. It lasts for a certain length of time. It's like a glove. There are the good ones. They last for a long time. But they don't last forever. Incidentally, I'm not really angry, and yet I am. I mean, why should I always be so understanding? What is wrong with the shape of my nose or the color of my hair? Let's face it, Fritz! I have to leave the town where I was born! Otherwise, they have to give me butter! What kind of men are you all? Yes, you too! You discover the quantum theory and you let yourself be bossed by half-savages. You want to conquer the world, but you're not allowed to keep the wife that you want. Artificial respiration and every shot a hit. You are monsters, yes. All bootlickers to monsters. I know. I know I am unreasonable, but you tell me, what good is reason in such a world? I mean, there you sit, you're watching your wife pack and you say nothing. The walls have ears, don't they? So you say nothing. One lot listens and the other keeps their mouth shut. I should keep my mouth shut too.
Yes. I love you, I should shut up. I love you. I love you, really. Could you give me that underwear? I'll need them. They're sexy. I'm 36 years old. I'm not too old yet. I can't do very much more experimenting. Next country I get to, it mustn't be like this, and the next man that I get must be allowed to keep me. Don't say you're going to send me money, you know you can't, and don't act as if it's only going to be for a couple of weeks. You know this business doesn't last to me a few weeks. You know that. Yes, I know that too. So don't say it's only going to be for a couple of weeks as you hand me my fur coat that I won't need until winter. Let's not talk about misfortune, Fritz. Let us talk about shame. Oh, Fritz.
Judith? What are you doing? Tidying up?
No.
Why are you packing?
Well, I would like to get away.
What do you mean?
Well, we have talked sometimes about me going away for a little while. Things are not too good these days.
Well, that's a lot of nonsense.
Would you like me to stay then?
Where would you go?
Amsterdam, away from here.
But you have no one there.
No.
So, why don't you stay here? You certainly mustn't go on my account.
No.
Judith, you know I haven't changed.
Yes.
Maybe it's not such a bad idea. It's stifling here. You need a breather. And I'll come and fetch you. 2 days on the other side of the frontier and I'd feel much better.
Yes, by all means.
This business here can't last too long. A complete change will come from somewhere. All this will calm down again like an inflammation. It's really a misfortune.
Yes, it certainly is. Tell me, did you meet Shrek?
Hmm? Oh, yes, I saw him. There's only in the stairs. You know, I believe he's sorry now that he cut us. He was quite embarrassed. In the long run, they can't hold us intellectuals down, no matter how much they hate us. After all, how would they make war with completely spineless wrecks? These people are not unresponsive, if one stands up to them. When do you want to leave?
9:15.
And where shall I send the money?
General delivery. Amsterdam, perhaps.
I'll get myself a special permit. My God, I can't send my wife away with only 10 marks a month. What a dirty mess this whole thing is. I feel awful about it.
Well, when you come for me, it will do you good.
Yes. To read a paper for once that has something in it.
By the way, I will look after you.
That's quite unnecessary for a couple of weeks.
Do you hand me my fur coat now?
After all, it's only for a couple of weeks.
That is all. And it is not enough. Yet it may tell you that I am still alive, as the man who takes a brick along to show the world what his house was like.
Thank you. Your mind is a beautiful piece of engineering. It's been said that if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you always got. Here's a chance to learn new ways to be with people and to be with yourself as well. Tune into The Positive Mind, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. It's knowledge from the heart, my friends.
You know, more and more I meet men and women who criticize themselves for not being able to deal with their emotions. The ideal they search for is a complete control over their feelings. They see being emotional as a sign of weakness.
Well, are they wrong? Is being too emotional a sign of weakness? Or is there a such thing as too emotional?
Well, that's what we're going to look at today, Julian, human emotions. When they're too much and when they're too little. We have at least two major opposing viewpoints. One says the mind must have the power over the heart, and the other says the heart is all the wisdom you need.
What do you believe? Do you wish you could feel more or less?
Well, let's consider that. This is Armand DeMille with Julian Gioiello here at The Positive Mind, Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on WBAI. All I do is try to show you a way of looking at things that might help you live a more positively minded life. My focus has been on loving relationships, the things that people have the most trouble with. Love, love, why is it so confusing? It should be so simple. Why should something so beautiful feel so bad at times? Well, that's a long story, and that's what I teach. Week after week, some aspect about loving that may help you in your quest to find emotional balance in your life. Email is a good way to contact me, armand@thepositivemind.com.
Emotional balance. When are emotions too much? And when are they too little?
Well, let's start off with a simple message to people out there who think that it's weak to show feelings. Here's a simple message. You're wrong. It's weak not to show feelings. When you meet people who have no feelings, that's a person who I consider to be fragile. The person who is so cool that they seem to handle all situations with equanimity, who look like they're totally in charge, who never cry or get angry, who are usually very private about their own feelings, these people usually are the people who hated their parents because their parents' love was so conditional.
Well, these people are living by some standard that their parents passed on to them, which was convinced them that they were showing emotions was weak.
You shouldn't show emotions. You shouldn't cry. There were fathers who were controlling and not very there. There were parents whose love and approval had to be earned time after time again.
Parents who criticized the child for needing anything, criticizing a child for being scared or for crying over food choice or something.
I remember my Uncle Sal at my mother's funeral. Yes, I had a mother, those of you who thought I might have been born, just placed on this planet. No, I had a mother. I was in my 30s. I had been a therapist for many years. I knew the importance of letting myself feel feelings. And there my mother died. I had to grieve her, and I knew it was important to grieve her. I knew I had read Kubler-Ross. I had taught this to patients. And here I was ready. I'm going through a death, and I'm going to go through the feelings of it. So I was at a funeral parlor with lots of family and friends around. My mother was laying there in an open casket. We loved her a lot. She died suddenly. I was weeping openly. My eyes had just seemed to open the gates of my tear ducts. My tears flowed naturally. I made no attempt to hide them or chase them away. I kept hearing my own saying, tears are the sweat of the heart. When the heart works hard, the eyes sweat. I knew this was important to go through. There I was, surrounded by 50 or so of my Italian relatives, many of whom were crying. But not my Uncle Sal, my mother's oldest brother, the king of the family, the oldest son of everybody. Nope, Sal was stuck on being a man. So he didn't weep, he just took care of everybody. And then Sal comes over to me and puts his arm around me and says, in a deeply affectionate but strongly paternal voice, "It's a terrible thing, Armand, but now you have to be strong so that you could be there for your sisters." And this was Sal's way. I turned to him and I said, "Sal, you take care of them, if you need to. I'm going to be who I am, feel what I feel, love as I love, and grieve as I grieve." Poor Sal. He used his system. He got married and divorced and married and divorced, and I guess he can't seem to find the right person. He's always stuck in a place where he's constantly shutting off his feelings. Do any of you know anybody like that? See, that's not strength, that's weakness. A real strong person has no fear of being themselves. Real strength is the person who can weep when they need to and not be afraid of what people think.
Real strength is a person who has access to all of themselves, their joys and their pains.
I spoke to a man the other day, Julian, one of those pseudo-strong types who never shows what he feels. In fact, so used to burying his feelings that he never even feels them anymore. It's a psychological condition that I call emotional alexithymia, dullness to all emotions. Now, this feeling, alexithymia, is kind of an interesting neurological condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that happens in the nervous system where you just can't feel. You have nerve endings are damaged. Alexithymia. I took it and I apply it to emotions, you know, as well, that there are people who can't feel any feelings. They just don't feel them. They're shut off. It's terrible to be dull, because dullness to pain means dullness to beauty, too. You can't just turn off pain without decreasing the joy as well. A lot of people take things like anger, and they're afraid to feel angry, so they shut off all of their emotions. And you live life without emotions. You live life without feelings. It's like living a gray life. It's okay. It works. You can survive that way. But there are no colors. You miss the sunflowers. The emotional thermostat controls all of the emotions. People who feel a lot of deep feelings have a lot of passion as well. The best lovers are deeply emotional people. People who are shut down are mechanical lovers. They think they're great, but really, they're quite boring. They're very limited in their sexual repertoire. No, if you want the most exciting lovers, don't choose the emotionally repressed. But then there are those who are so emotional that the sex may be great, but the rest of it, the intensity of emotions, sometimes manifest in lots of anger and rage as well. Now, that's a real conundrum if I ever heard one. You know, you got somebody wild and crazy, and they're filled with emotions, and they're so happy, and they want to be with you all the time, and they're excited. And sex is just fantastic and wonderful. But then they also have drama after drama after drama all the time running you.
Right, and is it worth that passion? Is it like a double-edged sword, right?
Well, it's a good question. You know when it's worth it? When you have excess. When you have excess energy and you don't know what to do with it, then you find somebody who creates problems and you spend your energy on those problems. But you're doing it because you're basically nervous. You pick people who are drama queens or kings because you're going to get involved in their drama, and that takes off some of your excess energy. So I would say people who are attracted to people who are overly dramatic are people who are looking to find some way to use up their excess energy. It's like you go over to, you know, if you want to ride a horse.
Mm-hmm.
You pick a horse that's a wild stallion that's never been ridden, because if you just want to ride a horse, go pick a nice horse. But if you pick a wild horse, then you have to spend all this extra energy training the horse. And now you have the horse in command. It's almost like you're commanding your emotions. And then you get on the horse and you could ride and you could feel better. But what you're really feeling better is you got rid of, you dumped a lot of your anxiety. So falling in love is like that. You can either ride a wild horse or you're going to ride a horse that works. But remember, you can lead a horse to water, but a pencil must be led. All right.
I like that.
I had to squeeze that in there, Julian. Okay. So how do you win? What's good and what's not good? And how can you tell? We're talking about balanced emotions, people who feel too little, people who feel too much. What about you out there? Now, how do you know when it's a too much emotion? You know when it's too much emotion. You just do. A woman came into a store. A friend of mine was in a store, an art supply store right here on 57th Street. And she was in there, and a woman comes running in, and she's saying, "You gave me the wrong thing. You gave me the wrong thing. You gave me the wrong thing." She was screaming she wanted a refund. Now, a refund based on having received the wrong thing, that deserves, you know, the woman has a right to get it. My friend, who was a therapist, noticed that the person was overreacting. Overreacting is a very big word. When someone is overreacting, you've got to figure a few things are going on. Either they're chemically altered, they may be drunk or stoned or something, or they're bringing more to the party than was invited. You know, they're coming in with a little more energy. They're worried about being cheated by everybody. You know, they're a little crazy.
They're defensive. And they're
exactly. And they're yelling too loud. So we hear it. You know, if you walk down the street and you hear somebody yelling, it alerts you. It makes you turn your head around. And most people will turn their head around and see somebody yelling too loud and say, "That's a little bigger than it should be. That's a little more than it should be." I have a friend, Natalie Garfield, who does therapy, and the way she does therapy is people would talk to her, and they would come to her and they would talk about their problems, their dramas in their life. And one of the things they would say is things like, "I was devastated by the fact that he didn't call me." And she has this expression. She said, "Well, how about a little less?" And it means, well, okay, I wasn't devastated, but I was disappointed. And she says, "A little less." "Well, I was hoping." And she says, "A little less." See, and what happens, she talks people down off
the drama.
Off the drama. Off the drama, and she brings them down to a normal reaction. Because at the normal level, it's a whole different story. When you see somebody having an overly emotional reaction, overly, bigger than the situation, then usually you can assume they're bringing more to it than just the situation. So if a store closes, if you go to a bank and the teller says, "Sorry, no more," and the person screams at the teller, you know they're bringing more to that teller than just the teller.
Right, there's something else happening
there
that doesn't, it's not just that situation. There's something going on there.
Exactly. Now, if you know that and you recognize that, and you recognize that intensity, you say overreaction. When you say overreaction, you don't judge the person, you just say there's more to it. We have to deal with this person as if they're loaded. So when a person is over-emotional, they're having an overreaction. Now, I knew somebody who had an overreaction recently, and it was chemically based. It was purely chemically based. It was like hormonally based. She had taken thyroid medication. She had forgotten to take a thyroid medication, forgotten to 3 days in a row, and wound up having this very big emotional reaction over nothing, and then realized that she was out of kilter. Kilter. You ever hear that expression?
Off kilter?
Off, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Kilter.
I always like to test.
It's not just an old one. I think it's new. We use it.
You do?
At times, when it's necessary, right?
You know where the word overwhelm comes from?
Where?
Overwhelm is, the whelm is the crest of the wave. When a ship is at the crest of the wave, it's doing beautifully. It's going right on top and it's sailing. When the ship turns over, it is overwhelmed.
It's over the whelm.
See that?
Oh,
and that's
wow.
What overwhelmed is, a feeling of being turned over in the sea.
It is.
Isn't that nice? Okay, back to it.
And that's what these people feel.
They feel overwhelmed.
They feel overwhelmed by this experience.
So when you see somebody who's having too big a reaction, what do you do? How do you calm them down? Do you do what most people do? Do you say to them, calm down, you're wrong?
No.
No way. Doesn't work.
That'll turn them up.
Turns them up. The thing you could do is the following, and maybe you and I can mimic this. Imagine you walk in a store,
okay,
and you are upset because they gave you the wrong item, and you're talking fast and a little extra loud, okay? Do that.
Okay. Well, I asked for this, and I didn't get it, so I really like my item. I like this gum, and it's not here, so please, can you order this gum? Because this is ridiculous.
Hey, I see you're upset by this thing, right? What happened to you?
Well, I mean, I want my gum.
Yeah, you were supposed to get some gum.
Yeah.
And you didn't get your gum.
Right? No, I didn't.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Well, hold on a second. Let's see what we could do about this to get it for you, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Look, if we go over here, we'll be able to get you exactly what you need.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, what I did is, and what you followed, was I mimicked your voice, and I took your voice and I reduced the speed of it. So I used your words to come back to you with your words so you could hear yourself talking, and lowered myself and brought my voice down with you, and you joined me.
So you say that the people that are in the situation are not aware of themselves being that way.
That's
and
right.
They need to be made aware.
And the way you make them aware is you join them. You get on their train with them. They're in a track and they're going a mile an hour. Hop in the car. You hop in the car with them and you just slow them down by doing what they do, but do it a little slower.
Wow.
And it brings them right down. It's a form of hypnosis. It works perfectly. That's how we deal with panic attacks. People come into my office and they are in a panic attack. And I say, I'm worried because I got, you know, the fire and it was outside. I don't know. My mother's waiting for me. And I'll talk to them just like that. I'll say, oh, I really see you're very worried. You know, let's go into my office. And I'll talk exactly as they talk, mimicking their voice and then slowing it down slowly. So if you're going, we'll do it one more time. Just count from 1 to 10. And count it like a little agitated.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
1, 2, 3. Sure. 4. See? Just took you at the end and I just trailed it, put a little space in it. Okay. So now that's what you can do with people. That means a couple of things. When you do that with somebody, you're recognizing them, and you're saying to them, I acknowledge you. I acknowledge you and what you're saying, and I'm with you, and you're also safe. You're also telling somebody you're safe to be with me. Over-emotional is a temporary condition. If it's a permanent condition, you have to understand what a person is looking for, to understand if it's real or if it's not real. Now, there are the three rules to relationships, which is just simply when a person is talking to you about an issue between you and them, you always want to know what their intention is. And trying to find out that intention sometimes requires you going into the very world that they sit in. You know, it sounds confusing. So in trying to figure out over-emotionality your own, wherever it is, well, if the tempo's up, you know it. You know if you're nervous. Nervousness is the key. If nervousness goes along with your emotion, then you are probably want to tone it down a little bit. If deadness goes with your emotion, you want to liven it up a little bit. You just don't want to be dead, or you don't want to be too nervous. You don't want to be panicking, and you don't want to be asleep. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. If somebody approaches you to talk to you, there are three things to figure out. Number one, is their intention positive or negative? If somebody wants to talk to you, you think to yourself, is this a constructive or a destructive attempt? Sometimes when a person comes to you who is overly emotional, they're coming to you because they're looking for safety. They're looking to feel nice. But they're in a panic. So they approach you with a kind of an energy that feels agitating and aggravating. But they want you to hold them. So that's one. Another one is coming after you because what they want to do is destroy the relationship. And this happens. There comes a time when a person will feel really bad and their intention in talking to you is to make trouble. Like, where were you last night? Right?
Now, it's a loaded question.
Man,
right?
You hear that question, mm-hmm. Julian? You say to yourself, even if you were nowhere, you say to yourself, well, this is a funny question.
Where do you think I was last night?
Okay, and that's going to get it right back, right? That doesn't do it. because that's nice and humorous, but you're not paying attention to the fact that the person you love is now about to do something harmful.
Right.
So you sense it. What are you doing last night? And like most people, you get defensive. And you should get defensive. You should cross your gonads. You know, you're saying, oh, woo, woo, this question could lead to trouble. Which reminds me of a joke. It's a good joke. A man tells his wife he's going out for a pack of cigarettes, and he goes down to the bar to get a pack of cigarettes. And back in the days when people used to go down to the bar to get a pack of cigarettes. So he goes down to the bar to get a pack of cigarettes, and he's waiting at the bar, and a woman comes over to him and says, hey, mister, want to have some sex? And he says, well, all right. And she takes him up to her apartment, which is not far away, and they have wild, passionate sex and drinking. And he falls asleep, and he wakes up, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And he says, oh, my God, my wife, she's going to kill me. And he looks around, and he says to her, he says, quick, give me some baby powder. And he gets baby powder, and he puts it all over his hands. And he goes home, and he sees his wife, and his wife says, where were you? And he says, well, I went down to the bar to get a pack of cigarettes, and this woman comes over to me, and she invites me upstairs and says, hi, would you like to come upstairs for some sex? So I go upstairs with her, and I have some sex with her, and then I fell asleep. And she looks at his hands with the baby powder, and she says to him, have you been bowling? Sometimes you just see trouble coming. Anyway, if somebody's approaching you with a destructive impulse, and it could mean any number of things, she could have just gotten off the phone with her mother and had an argument with her mother, and the next thing she's doing is she's raving, angry at her mother, or feels disappointed, but she's going to turn it on you and destroy the relationship. So you get a sense of a relationship that is about to become destructive. When you get that sense, when you get the feeling that it's destructive, you know somewhere in, how do you tell, 20 minutes into any conversation, if things haven't gotten better from the beginning of the conversation to 20 minutes later, if things have gone downhill, you must stop. Stop talking. Get out of the room. Do something. Don't accuse. Don't shout. Don't scream. But 20 minutes after you have been in a conversation, things should have improved. Because why would I talk to you, Julian? Why would you talk to me? Why would we talk to anybody? We talk to them to get things better, to improve things. The idea of talking is to feel good. But if you're talking and things are just getting worse and worse and worse, get out of there, because somebody's intention is not good. It could be yours or it could be theirs. So one of the first things to determine when having a discussion is this intention to be positive or negative? When somebody is overly emotional and they're coming to you, sometimes they're overly emotional because they've had a tragedy in their life. Somebody died. They need to be held. Romance is tough, my friends, but it's worth it. Feeling too much, it comes with the turf. Feeling numb, it happens also. But either way, you always ask yourself this question, how am I now? How can I be better? And that's what takes the most courage. This is Armand DeMille with Julian Joyello. We've been talking about love and risks. And we will be back with you again soon, my friends. If you wanted to listen to today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org and you could hear it in the archives, or you could go to thepositivemind.com. And you'll hear it there as well. You can make comments on Facebook. And I guess you could also do all that other stuff, tweeting and
everything.
Everything, right?
You can tweet at us, email us, Facebook, and we can take your questions and maybe...
Well, that's the thing we want. Yeah. We want as many of your questions as possible, since we don't have the open phone lines that we used to have.
This is our new modern version of that.
Yeah, a new modern version of it is, come on through this way. Send us a fax. No.
Don't send us a fax.
Don't send us a fax. Be back with you soon, my friends. Thanks, Julian.